Hey guys, welcome back to another This Is Not a Car Wash podcast. Really exciting today. Tom Palancia from Simonize. He is, you ready for this this intro here? The international sales manager, head of detailing and national key accounts. That is one big title right there. We're going to talk to him about how he got started in the industry. I have a bunch of questions for him specifically about car wash and mechanical car washes and what happens there, how that's kind of different than detailing in terms of hand wash and stuff like that. So we're going to go very deep into that. But before we do, of course, the promo ATA 300 Ammo Training Academy 300 series. We have an online 90 episodes. Tom is actually featured in it as well. And we talk a lot about chemistry, or what we call the chemistry cheat sheet. We're going to talk about that with Tom as well. But I do have some exciting news. On June 18th, 19th, and 20th of 2024, meaning a couple of weeks, or depending on when you're listening to this, we are doing a paint polishing session with Kevin Brown, Jason Rose, and myself in Denver at the Rupes headquarters there. So it is the first time we're doing it. It is going to be a massive event. Everything, what Jason calls paint polishing, better, faster, and in my case, more profitable. So we're going to have a lot of different sections, what we call round robins, where we'll be in the classroom with me talking about profitability, profit and loss, chemistry, et cetera. Outside sanding, polishing, DA, rotary. It's going to be an absolutely massive event. Having said that, we only have a certain amount of space limited for obvious reasons, because it's a lot of hands-on stuff with Kevin Brown, Jason Rose, and a bunch of the staff there as well. So it's going to be killer. I'll put a link down below. You can also go to ATA 300 once it's up on the website. I'm giving it to the podcast folks because I know that you guys are pretty crazy about detailing. And so I'm trying to keep it as limited as possible, but we're a little worried that it's going to explode and we don't want to have anybody excluded, so on and so forth. So that's a long way of saying first come, first serve. So with that being said, let's hop in, say hello to Tom. Let me see if I can get this to work. Ah, there you are, looking good with the guitars behind you. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How you doing, Larry?
I'm very good. Long time no see, for sure. So before we get into all the heavy chemistry questions, I know you're the international sales manager, the head of detailing, key accounts, so on and so forth. Before we get into, you know, what you do at Simonize, can you back up a little bit? I don't think people necessarily have your entire history. I don't think most people are like, hey, Tom, I ask a lot of questions. So Tom and I, let me back up. Tom and I have known each other 15 years or whatever. I think we first met at 8 IDA, Orlando.
Yeah. Probably Orlando.
Yeah. So you did some stuff with the International Detailing Association, the IDA. You were on the board or whatever, writing a bunch of, I remember sitting next to you when we were writing tests for interior.
The original certification.
Exactly. So there's a lot of backstory there. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into how you got into the detailing industry and then specifically to Simonize. I don't know if you started detailing before Simonize or what have you, but I see guitars in the background, Simonize, International, like, tell me the whole story here.
Yeah, actually I had, I started with Simonize almost, 16 years ago, going into my 17th year. But no, I had absolutely no experience at all in detailing. The way I got in was very roundabout. My degree is actually in secondary education in English. So I was a high school English teacher and taught for about a year. And
where?
Danbury.
You taught in Danbury?
Danbury High, yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought you were upstate a little bit more. So Danbury, by the way, is where I am, obviously. And you taught at Danbury High. Yeah. That was like across the street from my old house.
Yeah, so I'm 43 years old now, and you can imagine what I looked like at like 21. So clearly
they're like, sir, I mean, young man, you're late for class kind of thing. You're like holding the bus.
Oh,
like, yeah, I'm
all my students were taller than I was, looked older than I did. It was not a great
experience. It's a blessing now, because you look like you look like your late 20s. I mean, if you didn't have the beard, I would say late 20s, you know, 30s.
Yeah, well, this is actually, I'm just now finally able to grow this. I was also a musician, as you can see. So I would be playing shows in Manhattan or, you know, Boston, and trying to make it to class the following morning.
What kind of music?
Rock and roll, basically. I mean, it was
like original, or like
it was all originals.
Really?
So, five albums.
If I can convince you to get me some of it, I'm going to play it over this. So if I don't hear any, if you don't hear anything over this right now, it's because Tom is too much of a chicken.
Ironically enough, it's all on like Spotify and all that stuff.
Oh, nice. I'm going to be lighting up the internet looking.
I'm not going to tell you. So I went from having, you know, people singing my songs back to me at night to standing in front of a classroom of a bunch of adolescents who wanted nothing to do with anything I was saying. So
how many years did you do that? How many years did you do that teaching?
Oh, yeah, it lasted a year.
Got it. And you were like, okay, enough. And then you wanted to go on the road, I'm guessing, or no?
I did. Well, I was in a USO band, so went overseas, played at different like Air Force bases and for the troops. Yeah, so, you know, played all over, played, you know, colleges and you name it, and bars all over, really up and down the East Coast mainly. And
I'm going to be lighting up Google the instant this podcast is over.
What's funny is I'll show you some pictures. It's pretty ridiculous.
Did you have long hair?
My hair was not unlike, I need a haircut, I'm actually hopefully going today, but it's not unlike what I have now. A little crazier.
Got it. And is your wife a haircut or a, what is it, Cosmo?
No, she's an esthetician.
She esthetician.
Skincare, yeah.
Got it, all right. Look at that complexion, oh my gosh.
No, yes. Yes.
Anyhow, how long were you on tour for?
I mean, I did it for years. I was in multiple bands over many years, and I wrote songs for other people and things like that. Would go into different studios, and you know, I'd write whole albums for, you know, 15-year-old girls who were going to be pop stars and all sorts of things like that.
And this is prior or during the Simonize thing? Like, how did you transition to Simonize? And you're so this is. So this is from your like 20s to 30s, and then you said were Simonized until you're 43 and you're here for 17 years. Somebody do the math there.
Basically, I did that really seriously for a few years, and I in that same time obviously had to pay the bills. I landscaped. I worked for a landscape company, and ended up going back. Got into it, and I went to the botanical gardens in the Bronx.
We used to have a membership when I lived in the city. That is such a beautiful place. We would go there just to like get out of the city. You know, everything's New York City, yeah. Manhattan, you know, sidewalks or whatever. You walk in there and it's like you're in South Florida or something. I'm using it was definitely not the city. We love that place. So you work there?
No, so I went to school there. They do classes and things like that. And basically went for landscape design. And in a roundabout way, did a landscape for the owner of Simonize. And just over the course of meeting him and you know, him and his wife, and they were just lovely. And at some point, you know, they said, you need to come work for us. And
what did you start off as?
So ironically enough, I was actually going to take another landscape job with a bigger company down in Lower Fairfield County, which is, you know, a very affluent area, and was basically going to introduce them to the person who was going to take over my position.
Oh.
And they weren't having it. So, you know, I had actually interviewed a couple of times with Simonize. So, you know, he'd say, well, you know, meet with this person. And then I'm like, I don't think it's for me. And then I met with a gentleman named Al West, who's still, he runs basically the Northeast for Simonize. And we hit it off and I accepted the job. So,
and you, at that point, you had no detailing experience whatsoever?
None. So I wasn't actually brought in to detail. I was brought in for two things. One, to rewrite the training.
Oh, as a English teacher.
Yeah, it's just from being able to put together lesson plans, etc. And then to plan routes for the detail distribution
because of the landscaping. Physical routes, like the driving routes?
Right. So if you think about it, different sales guys have to, you know, drive around different territories, and it's not unlike managing different crews in landscaping. They have to go to certain points throughout the day, and you have to, you know, you have X amount of time, and you have to do it efficiently. So those skill sets ultimately got me into that side of it. And little by little, you know, obviously you start to pick things up. And then I actually started working with the detail products, and in the training of it, you have to obviously know what you're talking about. So it was one of those things where, you know, just to prove that it is a skill set for sure, and that, you know, not anyone can just detail, it wasn't something that came easily to me. But one of the things that I have that most people don't is a laboratory full of chemists. So, and obviously a lot of customers that I can go and pick their brains. I worked at, you know, in that time I would go and work for the day at different car washes in Hartford and detail shops, et cetera. And, but I spent weeks in the lab with the chemists, basically product by product saying, you know, what makes this do what it's supposed to do? And over time, you know, how can we make it better? Or, you know, this is what I found. You know, I would tell the chemist, like, this is what I encountered when I worked with it. Can we make it do this, 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 and this? And then they'd whip up a sample, and next thing you know, we have a whole new product line. And
that's why I appreciate what you do so much, because of the correlation of, like, how I have a similar background, where the point is somebody has to have feet on the ground, boots on the ground, whatever, saying, like, hey, this product works or doesn't. Here's what I'm seeing through my detail eyes, from my layman eyes. And then you look over at the chemist and, like, how do we make it do not that or more of this or whatever? And they're like, there's always this this space between the detailer and the chemist. And I felt like that's where, the pun intended, the chemistry is. That's where where you can really make a product that actually makes sense, because you're the guy in the trenches, but I'm not making the weapons. You know what I mean? If you do both of them, you can figure out what's up. So that's why I resonate and appreciate your situation there.
Yeah. So so the owner of our company, and I think we're one of the only left that are privately owned, but yeah. The owner of our company is a chemist. And, you know, then we have, you know, laboratories and different production facilities around the country with more chemists. So to be able to kind of approach everything through chemistry was a very different, I have a very different take on the detail industry than most. You know, it's I go and train people, you know, for the last 16 years, and most of the responses are, you know, why would you use this over this? Or on this, you know, whether it's contamination, whether it's a stain, whether it's, you know, specific surface, it's always, well, I use the green stuff, or I use the red stuff, or, you know, and most detailers were told by a sales guy, just use this, and that's fine.
It's all purpose cleaner, outside, inside, engine, wheels, gauge clusters, you're good. It's all purpose.
Oh yeah, the term all purpose drives me
crazy. I know, that's why I said that.
So, yeah, I mean, it's the way in which I'm able to look at it is, you know, this is safe for this surface, but not for this. And this is why whatever product was formulated, this is why it was formulated for this. Mm-hmm. And it usually, a lot of detailers have figured things out over the years, but it's typically through making mistakes.
Yeah, trial and error.
Yeah. Typically, yeah, it's causing damage and saying, oops, don't do that again.
Yeah, it's coming from opposite ends of the spectrum, as opposed to saying, like, here's the stain. What is this stain? What is it made of? And then what's the chemistry of that? And how do I counteract that?
And concept? What surface is it on?
What surface is it on? Yeah.
How do you not harm the surface in trying to remove?
Yeah, you know, I always say to people, what's the quickest way to get bird poo off of my paint rail now? I said, go in your garage. Hey, you got a garage? I'm kind of a crazy person. Go in your garage, open up the top. You have screwdrivers, hammers, that kind of thing. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, grab a flathead screwdriver. Like, okay. And I was like, then you go in there and you chisel it off as fast as you possibly can. That'll be the fastest way. And they're like, what? And I obviously I'm joking. I go, like, what you're asking is not, do you want the fastest or do you want the safest? And it helps them kind of get their brain go like, I see what you're talking about. So yeah, obviously don't use a screwdriver. We have to think about what the surface is, so on and so forth. So I think that's probably the number one. And coming from the other side, it's like, we'll spray everything we possibly can, all purpose cleaner. And if it works, then it works. If it doesn't, we know that doesn't. You know, that direction. How's my puppy doing there?
I don't know.
Somebody walked on the property, apparently. Yeah. I love your dog. So give me a little background of Simon Eyes. I don't think a lot, I mean, I should say this carefully because I think everybody uses Simon Eyes, but they don't know they use Simon Eyes in terms of like the car wash world. So talk about specifically and broad terms. I'm not looking for any inside baseball here, but how big is Simon Eyes? And their primary business, from what I understand, is janitorial. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but is it car washing? Is it janitorial? Is it like, give me the whole spectrum here.
Kind of all of it. So we manufacture, you know, cleaning, disinfecting, sanitizing products, protection products, obviously, kind of for every market, really. So if obviously automotive, a lot of people know us from either dealerships.
There you go.
Or, oh, look at that.
You see how quick that was? That was pretty good, right? I had that loaded up.
Very good.
I look like a professional.
So yeah, so through dealerships, whether they're buying a new car or, you know, most people don't get to see behind the scenes at a dealership, but quite often if you, the people that are actually cleaning all of the cars and protecting the cars for the lots are using Simon Eyes. Obviously car wash industry is, we're very visible there. So anytime anyone goes to an automatic car wash, you know, you'll see Simon Eyes on a lot of that marketing material. But janitorial, you typically don't see that, but we sell to everything from, you know, hotels to hospitals to school systems, prisons, you name it.
So I would imagine that the janitorial is twice the size. I'm trying to give people who are listening to this, which are most likely 90% of them are car focused, detail focused. They know ammo, Larry, that kind. So I would say that they're more educated in that market than they would be janitorial, because I don't know anything about janitorial, you know, in terms of cleaning.
Well, everybody's been to a hotel, right?
Right.
And you've seen the people pushing the carts and cleaning the rooms every... Well,
yeah, that's all your stuff. So what would you say...
Well, it's not necessarily, but we do make stuff for that industry.
Got it.
Every hospital room, you know, every time somebody leaves, that whole room gets cleaned and sanitized. So that we make those types of products.
And so what would the size of that end of the market...
That market is huge.
Compared to... Give me an example that is tangible to detailing. You don't need to give numbers, but like... I guess some sort of numbers, like 500 to 1 versus detailing, or like a billion to, like, how big is the janitorial, and how, in other words, how small
janitorial
is detailing?
Janitorial covers, just the term janitorial covers any building. I mean, whether it's a hotel, an office building, a school.
Cleaning, I mean, of everything short of cars, is that can I use that word?
Yeah, and then, but then obviously there's, you know, home products and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
So there, I mean,
I could see why that would be so much bigger than detailing. Like, 'cause I'm trying to get, a lot of times when I talk to you or any other person who's in the chemical manufacturing world, cleaning world, however you want to describe it, they always go like, it's not like this. It's how I take it because I have a chip on my shoulder, I'm sure. But it's like, they kind of like rub my hair and it, like detailing, it's great. But it's nothing compared to janitorial or all these other things that are like 10 times, 50 times the size of it. And then I'm like, that's ridiculous. And then I think, wait a second. Like, every single person in the world has something under their sink to clean whatever, the toilet, sink, whatever. Not everybody is going to have like amazing car care products, because not everybody has a car. And everybody who does have a car doesn't necessarily want to clean it. And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, or painted to the extent of a detailer.
Yeah. Right, right. So I go like, oh, wait a second. I need to check myself. Maybe not everybody's obsessed with cleaning, you know, crazy stuff like that. So janitorial is huge. It's everything except cars, but including homes, hospitals, schools, whatever.
Bus stations, train stations.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's pretty gross.
I mean, there's literally, you know, airports. It's huge.
Oh, so like, you know what? I've just realized now, I've been at places and I go, oh, cool, Tom, Simon Eyes, where you push the and get soap out or whatever.
Yeah,
in the bathroom.
You make hand soaps.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Now, with respect to the detailing, so now we have janitorial, it's huge. We have detailing that's obviously not as big.
There's also restaurants.
In the janitorial?
No. So restaurants is separate, because that would be an FDA type of thing. So, it would, we make a whole line of, you know, restaurant products as well. So things that are
FDA is only for the stuff that you would consume, or does that have to do with the EPA as well?
Well, it's both really, but EPA is involved as well. But anything that's going to be coming in contact with a person, or, in, you know, for instance, food production products, Those are, that's a very
like cleaning a table that's like cutting meat or something.
Correct.
And so that's a different division other than janitorial. I'm trying to unpack like what
it's kind of a subdivision, but yeah.
Just because it has certain certifications to be sold.
Right. So we have to, like, we have in our manufacturing and our warehousing and all that, we have different places and different regulations and parameters that we operate in to maintain the standards for each one of those types of,
like, to keep it sterile and so on. Wow. Okay. So I didn't know that. It seems very complicated or rigorous, I would imagine. With, I can't even imagine dealing with the FDA. I dealt with the EPA with one product and I wanted to jump out the window. It was the nightmare.
Well, if you think about it, the FDA is anything that comes in contact with the skin, right? So if you put lotion on your skin, that's one thing. If you put hand sanitizer.
So, I mean, so let me ask you this. Would it be something that I eat or... Yeah, something that I eat versus like you put, you know, cream on your skin, is that categorized as the same thing? Would you say putting it on your skin and consuming it is the same?
Yeah, because your skin absorbs things.
From a regulatory perspective, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wow. So, like, if I were to come out, I'm making this up.
I mean, I think I don't know the ins and outs of what they do. I'm sure there's different divisions in their industry as well.
Yeah.
Or in those agencies, but. Yeah, I mean, as far as we're concerned.
What would you say the least regulated is? Car cleaning? From like a Poison Prevention Act, EPA, FDA?
I wouldn't say least regulated, depending on where you are in the world. I mean, there's some places that are, I mean, you still see people dumping products down a drain or things like that. But yeah, I mean, in the United States especially, it's heavily regulated and used... arguably, there's more water reclamation being used every day because of that. Any new builds have to have certain parameters in their drainage and how they, you know, remove everything from waste to the drums, the packaging of the products. So detailing is probably regulated the least amount on that side of the automotive. Rather than like a commercial production.
So let me give you a scenario. If scenario one was a product came from outside the U.S., something that's, I'm not going to disparage another country because I don't even know, but an outside the U.S.,
another
country, and they produce a skin, I don't know anything about, you know, a skin cream that you put on your face, whatever it is, right? And it comes into the United States. Do they have more regulatory, like, is it the Wild West there? That's scenario one.
Arguably, the United States is easier than most. So if it's safe in Europe, it's definitely safe here.
Okay. And then, so they have more regulatory stuff in Europe than the United States?
I believe so, yeah.
Really? And so what about if I made a wheel acid. I'm trying to think of the hardest one in detail. A wheel acid in another country and imported it in the United States.
Any country, if you're importing something, even if I'm selling something from the States going to another country, you typically have to make sure that it's registered or
compliant
for that country. You can't just, it's not the Wild West by any means. And every border there's so much paperwork that goes in. You can't send something over a road, let alone an ocean, without quite a bit of paperwork and proof.
All right. Let me know if I'm off track here. Cause I thought it was like, I have to be aware as a detailer, as a person, as a responsible adult with a child, that the things that I buy that are not in the United States, I'd probably have to keep track of a little bit more, meaning like the flammability of certain products or whatever may be a little more loosey goosey if manufactured from other countries and somehow got in the country, or is that not a concern that I would need to have? Like, how do you see that's how difficult the question of that is?
I know what you're saying. It's a difficult question. So there are certain things that might be okay to come into the country, that, and certain things that are manufactured in this country that you still wouldn't want your kids necessarily working with, mm-hmm. right? Or having. So yeah, obviously I would say that doing your due diligence is still a good idea, but, like for us as a company, you know, we have certain standards that we follow, like certain products we just refuse to make.
Like what?
Things that are things that are like, you know, very harmful to, you know, aquatic life, for instance, you know, because you have to keep in mind that we manufacture things and then we sell them and we want to make sure that everything that we do is responsible. Unfortunately, once it gets into somebody else's hands, it's their responsibility, mm-hmm. right? So we don't want to put anybody in a harmful situation. So there's a lot more.
Let me ask you this. Is it fair to say that your manufacturing practices, because of the high level of United States or whatever it is, your morals, your FDA, the rules and regulatory, the way that you operate your business, are you at a disadvantage from not being able to play a different game that may be able to have a better, I'm using air quotes here that you can't see on the podcast, better product because you can't bend the rules and put this stronger product that you know is unethical or dangerous to aquatic life, whatever you said. So you're playing on a different level. Like, I can only make it this strong. You see what you get where I'm going?
Yeah. So I would say yes and no, depending on how you're looking at it. So there's, on a small level, like if you have, you know, a product that's like, let's just say on social media is blowing up as this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? And it's not, let's say, VOC compliant. It's not, you know, within the standards of what most companies have to follow, right? Especially large manufacturers like we are. We can't fly under the radar. you get fined for all of those things. But if you're, you know, small, you can ultimately kind of get away with it for a certain amount of time. The thing is, if you ever got big enough, then you're not, it's not going to work. And I've seen many products like that hit the market and then just disappear. And it's typically because they ended up on someone's radar. The thing now with, especially in, you know, like what I deal with larger, you know, companies typically and sales of a, let's just say a larger amount rather than a one or, you know, one off.
Yeah. You're doing like 330 totes and like containers right. full of stuff, not like right. tiny little bottles. Go ahead. Yeah.
They're also under scrutiny. So the fact that we are all on the level is actually opens us up to more opportunities. So yeah, do we miss little sales here and there? Yeah, but I wouldn't say that it's detrimental.
I'll say it another way because I know you have to. I'm a little bit more not reserved here. I can say because from a detailing perspective, I look at it and I go like, man, that product looked like it really worked well on this Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And you're like, it beaded the water. Everybody has a beaded the water. You know, some crazy interior coating. You can shoot laser beams at it and do blah, 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 all the before and after what social media is about. And you're like, man, that's amazing. And then as someone who's deeply engrossed in the detailing industry and believe in the science and the chemistry and want to have the best stuff, I'll have that product and then we'll do some research on it and be like, there's no way. And I'll pick it up like this and I'll put it on the shelf again and go like, there's no way that we could ever manufacture something like that within an ethical, moral, and just standards of operating a company in the United States, FDA, EPA, Poison Prevention Act, so on and so forth, and make a product like that. So sometimes, you know, the reason I was leading you down that question is it's not a fair playing field because if you just, I don't want to say the word cheat because that's not fair. If you don't play by the rules that we all should play by, I'm bringing a knife to a bazooka fight. I can't have the same beating action because it's killing things like people in the water or whatever. So I don't know.
Yes. So there's, you know, there's many, many raw materials that are now banned in the United States that are not in other countries.
Right, like give me tire shine. Remember years ago when you and I first started tire shine, you could have that thing like absolutely shiny and amazing, blah blah blah. And then there's like, oh wait a second, it's a carcinogenic. It's like you can have really shiny tires, or you could kill people.
There's quite a few things have been determined to be carcinogenic over the years. But that's actually the tire shine was more like a VOC compliance thing. Yeah. So people were getting away with, you know, having high VOCs, but because it wasn't considered, they didn't name it a dressing. Mm-hmm. They were getting around, but that's all been fixed now.
I think for people listening, I think you just have to have some perspective. I know you're trying to be careful. I'm being more flat-footed because I'm not behind a company like that, and I can appreciate your situation. That not everything that works perfectly and is amazing and you see the before and after is what it is. It may potentially work, but the downside is you're not doing it ethically, and I don't want to say illegal, but I guess, is illegal the right word? It's illegal, maybe not in their country.
Like, there's certain things, I think, you know, we've discussed this, you know, at length, where you can see things on social media that were filmed in, you know, let's say South America, or filmed in you know,
Indonesia or whatever,
different places, that frankly, you know, we know exactly what's in that product and why it works so well. It's frankly illegal to manufacture in the United States. So you might see it, it's beautiful, it looks awesome on social media, but it's technically not.
I'll leave it with one last American analogy, because I'm baseball all day long with my kid. It's like playing baseball and you're playing with a metal bat or a corked bat in a wood baseball game. It's like, yes, you hit the ball really hard, totally cool, but did you really? Because you kind of you cheated. And a little bit different than baseball is you're also kind of like killing things like fish and people. And so that's the part. I'll leave it there. I think I've beaten a dead horse with that whole thing. But let's move into the car wash world. What do people not realize about car washes? Now, the normal philosophy, or not nomenclature, the people go like, you take your car to a car wash, it gets scratched. Now, I know that you sell a gajillion dollars worth of product to car washes literally around the world. And so I know I'm putting you a little bit on the spot, but is that really true? And then, like, what actually happens in a car wash? Like, what's causing the issue, if there is one?
So car washing is, first and foremost, it's chemistry. I mean, it's chemical cleaning.
So not everything should be pH balanced, Tom? I don't understand.
There is a whole world that goes on let's take a conveyor car wash, friction car wash.
A regular everyday one you drive past that you see thousands of. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the big ones.
The big guys.
The ones that have you get put on a conveyor belt and it pulls you through.
Yeah. Walk me through that process from a chemistry perspective.
Yeah. So they're basically, if you think about it, a car has, you know, a ton of different surfaces on the outside of the car. If you have, you know, bugs, you know, insects are acidic, right? So you'll typically have a higher pH product that I'm not going to go into a whole training here.
I get it.
Higher pH product.
We do go through a whole training thing on this down a massive rabbit hole in the ATA 300. You see what I just did right there? It's pretty clever, right? This is the part where I go, ding.
So, so, you know, you have products that will neutralize and, you know, surfactants that'll separate, you know, insects from paint.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because if you don't, the insects are acidic and they'll eat through the paint.
So you're doing that first is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's typically, so you give it some dwell time. And then, you know, that depends on where you are and what time of the year it is.
In theory, lots of bugs, you pull your car in, your car's got lots of bugs in, you say, hey, mister, you give him the money or you push the button on the thing, it goes on the conveyor belt. The first thing it gets hit with, you're saying, is high pH.
Typically.
And then what is that like? Give me, what does that mean? Like, quick, is like the thing is like shooting out. Is that?
No, that would be like, you know, when, you know, you get in, somebody sprays the front of your car.
When you have like a little weed killer thing. A thumb gun. I never heard of that. A little thumb gun. So that's what that person, that is a manual person. That is a.
Typically.
A real, you know what I mean? Not a machine.
Right. But it doesn't, I mean, you can do it also kind of with a pre-soak, but there's different ways to do this, right? So. Long story short, you're going to have high pH, which is going to clean
the bugs, the tar,
and any anything that's you know, oil based, road oils, things like that, diesel film, etc. So then you'll have a low pH.
But where are you in the cycle now? So now we've already gone on the thing.
These are what are known as pre-soaks. So prior to anything really touching the car, these are just.
So this is before you get into the tunnel, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So when you get in when you're in the tunnel, there's arches. There's those things.
All right. So I'm trying to take the listener and the viewer through. So now, just before you get onto the thing, dude walks around with the garden thumb gun all the way around. Now you're on the thing and you're going through and your kids are going crazy in the back. Look at all the whatever, you know, right? And so you've gone in this thing. Now at this point, you've had high pH. Now you're saying you hit it with what?
Well, yeah, you typically have a bug product in the beginning if there's bugs. And then you'll get high pH. This is going to, it's basically going to soften, if you'd say, any oils and you know, which would be anything petroleum-based, which would be anything like... But safe, obviously, for the car.
And now, and are we agitating car, at this point in the middle? In this?
No. So this is just, it's got some dwell time. You can, depending on the wash, sometimes they'll rinse. It really depends on the length of the tunnel, what they do. It depends on, we make, what feels like 100 different high pH pre-soaks, and then...
And that's all dependent on if you're in Alaska versus Florida, time of year.
Yeah, it depends on. Yeah, everything depends on the types of contaminants and soils that we're working with.
So around
the world, it differs.
Okay, yeah. On that point, I still want to go through this process, but so you don't sell, as you just alluded to, one car wash soap for a massive car wash place. Obviously, I know you don't, but and then people listening also know that. But I'm trying to make the point when you go to Alaska versus Costa Rica or whatever, you are dialing in the specific temperature, humidity, so on, and the contaminants that they get there. Bugs are in Florida and they're probably not in Alaska. I don't know the answer to that, but probably not. So you're not developing the particular chemistry, i.e. high pH, whatever, before they go into that car wash. Is that a fair statement?
Correct. So I will tell you this, just to kind of back up. When you say, when car washes have a negative,
car wash equals scratches.
People just automatically think that car wash is scratch. That's typically because they've had experience at a car wash where they did not, and this was really happened years ago, where car washes did not maintain their equipment, and they did not use or really care about a clean car. Therefore, they didn't really care about the chemistry. Those were typically like what we call rollover, like the smaller ones at gas stations. Yeah, they have a lot of brushes. If no one's maintaining them, those brushes will get, and they're not using the right chemistry, those brushes will get kind of built up with debris and then they scratch.
It's like a dirty towel on the ground wiping a clean.
It's no different than somebody, you know, doing a hand wash with dirty mitts or, not rinsing.
Just washing with contamination. But it also makes sense in a car wash. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying it's logical that if you have 100 come in on a good Sunday or Saturday, whatever, like it's going to get dirty. And so that was always my issue. Aside from the fact that a lot of ones I saw were plastic, but I'm sure nowadays they're some sort of funky microfiber or whatever. Sure. Yeah. But I remember in California with Matt Farah, we were doing a video and we had to clean the car before the blah, blah, blah. And this thing was straight up plastic that was just like slapping the side of the car. Again, that was years ago, but it seems how could you possibly clean, like the way we wash cars down there, which I know you think is crazy, you know, everybody thinks it's crazy, where I only have the towel to do a couple of wipes and the towel goes in the wash and I grab a new towel. There's no way to contaminate it. How could you possibly, in a car wash setting, change out all the things when you have 100 of them coming through and there's like 10,000 towels doing this?
So there's a few different things. So the car wash industry has evolved even in the last decade. Let alone two, where they are less likely to scratch, even more so than a hand wash at this point. And it comes down to the fact that their entire job, as far as an operator of a car wash, is to make sure they have a clean, dry car at the end that the customer is happy with, so they come back. It went from, you know, $3 car washes at those gas stations to, you know, $20-$30. And it's a big ask but it has to do what it says that it's doing, right? And it's, you know, a lot of people also just associate the car, like especially the longer car washes, with being a ride, like an amusement park.
Oh, sure. It's entertaining. It's awesome.
And that's not untrue, right? You want it to be, the customer experience to be amazing. And car washing, the car wash industry knows that.
That's why they put colors and stuff when they're in there. Is that the main reason for colors?
Colors, yeah. They don't. The fragrances and colors don't clean any differently. It's the experience,
right?
So it should be a little bit of a ride. You should be Disney World a little bit. No one gets their car wash because they want to feel bad. They, you know, it's the whole point is to, if they want to maintain their vehicle and they, you know, they want to feel happy. That's why people get details, you know, you're Disney World. So that being said, they are more in tune with the chemistry going on that car and the equipment, what's working, what's not working, every nozzle. They're checking it daily throughout the day. They're maintaining, like, you know, in certain times of year when there's certain types of debris on, they're constantly cleaning the tunnels themselves, the equipment in the tunnels, but also the chemistry used in the tunnel. It's, you know, if you think about it, if I used something like a high pH, like let's say a degreaser, right? If, and some of your listeners are probably have done this before where they've sprayed a degreaser on the car, right? And washed it with probably a neutral car wash soap, a hand wash soap. It holds water. It leaves a film on the glass especially, right? So if I were just to wash my car like that, and especially in an automatic car wash with just high pH and neutral soap, it would come out, it would be soaking wet, and the glass would have a film on it. Not unlike spraying a degreaser on your microwave, like a kitchen degreaser, like a 409 Fantastic on glass microwave front.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's a mess. But if you use an acid to follow up, you need the high pH to break down those oils, right? You have different things you're trying to clean. But a low pH is what's going to clarify that, brighten that glass. It's also going to remove that film. It's going to make the
bring
water
it
break.
Balance. Isn't it going to balance it out? If you had high pH in the beginning, from what you're saying, it goes in, it agitates, and you're explaining that nowadays the car washes are less plastic and more, and they're maintaining it on a regular basis because they know that they're fighting. Like, nobody goes to a car wash because of the scratches. You've got to clean it. Now it goes through the thing, and at the end, you're saying it goes back down to low pH to balance the car and to get the film that was put on before, and it was put on purposely so that it could do its job. I think the moral of the story is most people think I need a pH balanced car wash, and I know every time I do that, I poke you on all purpose cleaners and pH balance, and I know your brain goes like, I can't think of this. This is crazy. You know, people go nuts on this stuff. So what you're saying is at the end, you're now hitting it with acid. I'm using air quotes for that.
Yeah. So, an acid is anything low pH. It's not all scary. Right. Obviously, some of them are, but acids are what brighten glass and clean bare metal, and will actually make water break. Like it'll dry better rather than hold water. Mm-hmm. A high pH typically is like fingers, and the reason that typically low pH happens right before any friction is because that all those brushes, you know, the mitters, and they're called, you know, the stuff that touches the car, low pH will actually repel bacteria, things like that, things that'll build up. So it, you're less likely to have that debris that you're referring to actually build up on any of those, those surfaces. And the actual material used is completely different. It doesn't have the longer fibers, so to speak, that would actually hang on to things, especially in colder climates. So, it's
different than it once was. But can I ask a question and clarify? So you're saying that the low pH goes on. So high pH, dwell time, then sometimes rinse. But
So here's the thing. I we could spend a lot of time on this, but every car wash is a little different.
Got it. Okay.
The whole point is to get a clean, dry car at the end.
Got it.
And there's obviously all the different brighteners and you know, polishes and all of those online products after. But the actual cleaning is always going to be a high and a low pH. At that point, you need, for anything that touches the car, they'll also use a lubricating soap. So something that's super, you know, that has that high foam that acts like ball bearings, you know, that is a barrier between the paint and the surface anyway. So you can go to certain car washes and they're just perfectly safe. But the people who don't use the right stuff and don't maintain the equipment, et cetera, it could very well scratch the car.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of good car washes around here, quite frankly. I think what I'm learning now from you is, one, it's almost like when they say, hey, what makes a good detailer? It's like, well, how do I find a good detailer in Idaho or whatever? I get a lot of those questions. I'm like, well, you go interview the person. How is he dressed? How is he acting? How's the shop? How's the thing? All these other things outside of detailing. To me, I feel like the analogy being made is like, hey, when you go to this car wash, it could be a very good car wash or a very bad car wash. It really depends on the outside factors of how it's run and the owner. Is he cleaning? Because my buddy last night, I had baseball board meeting last night, my buddy John, he came out after the meeting and he showed me his huge, massive GMC gargantuan pickup truck, like $80,000. Like, these things are huge now. And he showed me with his light, it was nighttime. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's so squirreled. And I was like, what happened? Because this guy washes it with a diaper, you know, that kind of thing. And he goes, I went to a car wash. And I said, I can't imagine the car wash doing this much damage. And then I said, explain it to me. And he said, well, before I got in, before it was wrenched, before it was high pH, before there was any ball bearings on there, they took a boat brush and they brushed it first before he went in. I'm sure you've seen that. So the point I'm trying to make is not every car wash is a horrific thing. I think the way that it's set up and run and managed or whatever. Yes,
but even using if they use the right type of a brush, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure many detailers use brushes all the time, right. But they maintain, they clean them. They use, you know, bucket grates and things like that. If they are, you know, between, you know, while washing and multiple buckets and all that. And then there's some that don't. I mean, there's there's always gonna be a site specific thing.
I think you're right.
But yeah, so generally speaking, there's it's always chemistry. Now the type of car wash, a longer car wash just gives you more dwell time. It gives you more of the bells and whistles you can put on there to enhance the protection, enhance the polishes, etc. And you know, more room for blowers and things to make sure the car is dry when it comes out. There's online you know, wheel products. Sometimes you'll have, you know, two different pHs in those, just like in the paint. You'll have it really depends on how the setup is. So it's up to typically the chemical sales guy and obviously the team at whatever car wash to ensure all the things are dialed in correctly.
Right.
And that happens over a long period of time and it's updated constantly as climates change and seasons change, et cetera. But there's different types of car washes.
I think most people don't realize that. I never realized that until I met you 100 years ago about how much dialing and tweaking goes into an actual car wash, as opposed to here's a bottle, here's a 55-gallon drum or whatever it is that you sell to XYZ car wash, stick the little hose in there, suck it out, shoot it on the car and wash it. So I, in defense of, hey, every car wash gets scratching, in defense of that, I will say that there's a lot more chemistry and thought that goes into it. I think you do have to pick, just like anything else in this world, meaning restaurants and detailers and everything in between, you have to pick the right one and find the right car wash to make sure that the people are doing their thing. But I do think I want to give you the last word, but the thing that I find ironic about this conversation is that the perceived, give me a second here, the perceived bad car wash scratching thing that we have in our head, those people, those entities are far more sophisticated and intelligent with respect to cleaning and chemistry than versus the detailer who is, you know, I'm giving typicals here, who is wiping with a diaper and the Q-tips and that whole analogy, that whole kind of thing. But generally speaking, has no idea about the chemistry. Do you see the dichotomy of how ironic that is, where it's like they're bad scratches and some of them are and some of them aren't, and then the detailers are like, we're amazing and whatever,
but some aren't. Yeah.
So I find that fascinating, and why I have such a push for us detailers to, if we could just bring the chemistry level up, as opposed to just all-purpose cleaner, and I know that I use green when this is that, and I use orange when this guy throws up, and I know, you see what I'm saying? I find that kind of funny.
So yeah, I mean, think there's a few things to consider. It's you have best practices in all industries, but you have, depending on, in an automatic car wash, it's convenience, right? It's somebody can get their car washed in a few minutes, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, 30.
Right.
And it's time, and that's, it's all still maintaining your vehicle. It's, and you can do it better. And really, the more bells and whistles you put on, the easier it is to clean and easier it is to protect. But if you do it once in a blue moon, your car is filthy, and you know, if your car is loaded with dirt, and then it's
a little bit. I can't agree with you more. I use the analogy of going to the gym. It's like, I go to the gym one time a year, and it's like, I don't understand. Like, I'm not Schwarzenegger after this. It's like, well, you didn't wash your car for 2 years, and you want to come in and spend $100 and think that it's going to be hunky dory. Like, it's just, that's not like a thing that we've made. That's just life.
Yeah.
I don't, that's the part where I go.
Yeah, but, you know, by hand washing, you know, a lot of guys, they're doing all the friction. Right, they're using less chemistry to loosen soils and using more elbow grease.
That's the point I was making before, that I kind of like chewing on that irony to kind of learn more about that. That's where I'm like, all right, we got to up our chemistry game, because the guys that are bad will know way more than we do about chemistry, you know, the car washes.
And, you know, that's why touchless washers get, you know, you see them popping up all over the place. And touchless is probably the most difficult way to wash a car.
Why?
Because it's all chemistry. It's chemistry and high pressure water.
Because there's no agitation whatsoever. No physical, no mechanical. Mechanical.
Yeah, interesting. And that's, you know, on paper, the safest way to do it. But it's also the most difficult.
And is it difficult because on the scale of pH, two more minutes. I know you're crazy. You got to run.
No, I'm fine. Yeah.
On the scale of pH, is it more drastic? Is that why? Meaning it's a stronger high pH?
Oh, yeah. The chemicals are definitely stronger in a touchless than they are in a friction wash, yeah. And even a friction wash is typically stronger than anything you would use in a hand wash. So if you think about it, the chemicals have to do all the work.
Yeah.
So you need to be able to loosen things, not allow them to dry again on the surface, and high pressure rinse them off evenly.
So a touchless wash is like way more precise, technical, dangerous. Not dangerous is the right word, but
it's more difficult from someone like me.
More room for error, is that fair to say?
No. What I'm getting at is it's more work on my end to dial things in.
I will say this: like if I were to go, which I'm not, because you know I'm crazy, and I actually think the therapy and the washing the car, nobody needs to. Everybody knows that I would wash my car by hand forever and forever and forever. But if I were to go to a car wash, and I'm not just saying this because I know you and you're my friend and I know Simon, but I would go to a Simonize car, you know, there's where you can see out front, you know, they have the thing on the barrels that say Simonize or whatever you get, you know, the promotional thing, because I know that someone, you and or whoever that works for you or whatever, goes in and actually metaphorically or maybe literally dials in the whatever the chemicals, and you're like, okay, I know that they're putting the best product and the best chemistry possible on the car. Having said that, you can have all the Simonized products in the world. Doesn't mean it's going to come out fantastic based on what you know, we talked about. Maybe the management's there washing it with a brush and one employee has a dirty rag or whatever. So that's the part,
right,
where you got to go
you'll
in.
See, I mean, it's just like anything, and just like a car, a restaurant.
Correct.
If you see that there's a line, there's probably a reason.
Right.
If you know, just like going to a restaurant at 6 o'clock at night, if there's no cars in the parking lot, you probably think twice about eating there, right?
I agree.
Whereas if, you know, you go somewhere that's packed, you're like, okay, obviously, you know, they know something that we need to get in on. So if I pass by a car wash, especially if it's a tunnel car wash and there's no one there on a Saturday that's beautiful, especially after it snowed, because, you know, even in the winter in the Northeast, once there's salt in the ground or, you know, on the roads and et cetera, it's unlikely, even if you were to wash your car in your driveway or whatever, that you're going to get underneath, you know, that you're going to lay down under that car and spray it and get it.
Even if you did,
it
wouldn't be to the extent of the car wash with all the.
Right. And anything that would actually take away the minerals like the salt. So, car washes are packed for that reason. But if you go past like one of those large car washes and there's no one there, but then you pass like the touchless wash or you pass the smaller washes and there's a line, I mean, every indication is that car wash is bad, the one that had no one there.
Right.
Because that should be a recipe for success.
Got it. This is a super helpful conversation. I don't want to say dispel the myth, but to some degree dispel the myth, but to really understand what goes on in a successful car wash and the thought process. Because right now, I think, certainly I'll speak for myself, before knowing you and learning more about this stuff, it was just like, car washes are evil. That's it. That's all I need to know, kind of thing. And I see now, like, okay, I can appreciate it. Does that mean, I'm just being blunt, does that mean I'm going to go to a car wash? Probably not. Just because I'm obviously the 1%, like the people listening are the 1% of the 1%, but I have appreciation for the amount of work and the chemistry that you do, to the point that it's almost embarrassing to some degree to myself, because I don't have, and I'm trying to learn even more about the chemistry. You out chemistry me, if that's a word. We as detailers, I think, should be up at that level, because we tend to poo-poo the, car wash, poo-poo. But they're the actual experts. So it's kind of, I love the irony and the thought and kind of thinking about all those things.
It's no different than, you know, they do that every day, right? You know, anyone in a car wash industry does it every single day. Mm-hmm.
Like hundreds and hundreds a day, like thousands.
Right. And I'll tell you that the car wash operators that can handle a polisher is in the smaller percentage.
Yeah, yeah. So on the flip side, yeah.
It's just a matter of, you know, what everybody's kind of thing is. So, yeah, I mean, they understand chemistry for sure, in as far as the exterior cleaning of a car.
So let's end on this note. Can you just clarify for the detailers out there? Because I don't know how to articulate it in a way that makes sense. We've definitely broached this. We've poked it. We've gone back and forth and whatever. This concept that I run into 1,000 times a day, not necessarily with detailers, but with a lay person that wants to avoid the car washes, right? And wants to do it in their own house, their own driveway, whether it's therapeutic or whatever the case may be, they want to do it there. Great. No arguments. But the immediate thought is, I get a lot of emails. Hey, is your soap pH balanced? Is it pH balanced? What does that mean from a chemistry perspective for you? What are they actually asking, and what do they really want? What's behind the scenes? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, if you think about it, the easiest way to explain pH balanced is neutral. So
do we want it? Do we not want it?
I think in a hand wash situation, on a typical hand wash situation, you're just trying to.
How is the car maintained at this point? Give the scenario. Is it like half, like they wash it every week, or is it once a year wash, or what are we talking about?
Well, I guess here's the thing. You can have a pH balanced car wash soap without an issue. No issue whatsoever. It doesn't matter where you are, doesn't matter what time of year, all those things. You're fine.
So it's just lubrication at this point, right?
I mean, it'll still clean, don't get me wrong, but what you're not going to have is like that specialty cleaning, right? Mm-hmm. So just like, I think at this point in the detailing industry, there's very few people who detail just, or wash a car with just soap, mm-hmm. right? There's products for your wheels, there's products for your lower rocker panels, etc. And those are meant for those types of soils. The easiest way that I like to do it is, high pH is what removes the oils, right? So your tar, your road oils, etc. They're also what's going to neutralize anything acidic, whether it's insects, bird waste, etc. Tree sap, although tree sap really, gel, hand sanitizer gel is probably the best.
People don't know that. There's a little tip for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, isopropyl alcohol is the easiest way to remove tree sap, and isopropyl evaporates super fast. Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, if you're pre-treating those surfaces first, just like in a car wash, they're basically doing that in those.
I was gonna wait for you to finish and say, you're basically saying what's happening in a car wash. We're just trying to mimic that philosophy of changing the pH during the wash based on the condition of the car, but we're doing it in our driveway.
Right. So you're going after the contamination. Now, like for instance, as I said, like low pH would be typically for your glass and for your unpainted metals, right? Like bare metal surfaces. Very few cars have bare metal rims at this point. Almost everybody's got painted rim. So an alkaline wheel cleaner is safer, right? An acid will eat.
Meaning a higher pH.
Higher pH.
Stick with the high low, because I can get confused. Yeah. A higher pH. That personally, that's where I've chosen. In the past, we would always go with acid. Acid has its place in so, my world occasionally for the super crazy weird but for the everyday average person, increasing the pH and having a non-acidic, so that's a low right. pH. I'm trying to make sure that we're on.
Unless you can neutralize it, if acid gets on paint and you don't neutralize it, it will eat it.
Of course.
And I've probably seen those rims where you can flick the clear coat right off.
Right.
That's somebody using an HF wheel cleaner probably and never neutralizing it.
HF, describe.
Hydrofluoric. Sorry. Yes, hydrofluoric acid.
Yes.
The same stuff, you know, on Breaking Bad when they're getting rid of bodies.
You can break down bodies and clean your wheels in the same thing. Yes.
But that's what it's technically eating that bare metal. At the very least, even if it's a short dwell time, it's at least removing the rust and it's bright and shiny and you can't see it. So, an alkaline wheel cleaner typically uses surfactants that separate so you can flush them away with water.
I would say the bottom line is if you're trying to clean something that has dirt on it or some sort of contaminant, think about what the contaminant is and use the proper product for that.
Right.
In this case, oil, so on and so forth, it would be a high pH.
So, right. If you think about it, like it's just like skin. I actually associate detailing. We referred to my wife's business and aesthetics. It's basically the same thing.
That's what I said in my first original ammo thing. Paint is like skin. You need to treat it like skin. That was the whole analogy. Like if you have a dandruff, are you going to use a high pH or a low pH? People don't realize that it's not a neutral. You're not, if you have dandruff, right?
Or if you have oily skin, your face wash is going to be a higher pH.
Of course.
Because it's going to remove the oils that your body is producing. Then if you have dry skin, it's not going to want to do that. So it'll be probably a lower, like acetic acid,
that's always in every, you know, dandruff, Head and Shoulders or whatever. So I use that analogy and they go like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, if you use the pH neutral hair wash.
It's safe for everything. So when I say for all, you know, safe for all, it's probably neutral.
That makes sense. And so I guess I'll leave with, it's not bad to be neutral. It's just not the catch-all for everything. If you're looking to do something in particular, it's like taking an aspirin when you're bleeding. It's like, well, okay, aspirin is great for all the things, but you should probably put a Band-Aid on, or you should be more precise with that. And I think as we round third on this podcast, I'm basically saying we need to understand more about the chemistry. We of course go like down a massive rabbit hole in the ATA 300, but we just Google what is the pH scale, just to even have the conversation. That's why I was getting, I sort of not corrected you, but you know, when you say alkaline and base, and now you're starting to confuse people like high pH and low pH. Let's stick with that right now. But obviously you're an expert in this, but the point being, if you're listening to this, be like, okay, I know that I need further investigation if I'm a detailer or if I'm just cleaning in my garage. I say,
it's use your head.
Yes.
It's use your head. Like if you're trying to clean a carpet floor mat, you don't step on like cement necessarily before you get in your car. You step on the road, right? Or asphalt, you know, which driveways mostly are, you know, predominantly are asphalt.
Right.
That's oil. You have oil on your shoes. You get in your car. If you're trying to use a neutral carpet cleaner on
like oil, dark stains on a tan carpet, and you're like, how come this is not coming out? It's not going to come out. It's oil. So you got to use a high pH, I think, you know, we're not going to be able to do a 5-hour lesson in a 1-hour podcast, but the idea to leave them as they, you know, click off or they're polishing or they're cleaning their car, like, you know what? After I put the kids to bed, I'm making this up, I want to go on Google and I'm going to learn the pH scale just so I can understand what high means and low means, and then acid and bases and alkalines. And that's when it starts getting a little confusing because it's all kind of the same, you know, same word for a different thing, whatever.
Yeah. I think even more importantly, know what you're working with.
Meaning the
detailers that are working have a whole arsenal of products they use every day, and
not just like green is for goo and red is for throw up and whatever the color, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. So I agree with you. I know you got to run. This was super helpful. I appreciate your time. Obviously check out the Simonized website. If you have a car wash in your area that doesn't have a Simonized sign, you should call Tom and Tom will fly out there. You travel like insane amount. Like what? Like is your frequent flyer, can you go to like around the world first class or something?
I don't know what I have at the moment, but it's, yeah, I'm every week somewhere.
That is unbelievable. And we'll end on this. How many car washes do you even know how many car washes is Simonize in?
Oh god, I have no
like
idea.
Thousands, right?
Yeah.
That's just crazy to think about. And so it's like hundreds of thousands of gallons a year or a day, or like, you guys are insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we manufacture just under 4 million pounds of product a week. I don't know what the
That's like two.
I don't know what goes to car wash versus janitorial versus
whatever, but yeah, that's like a couple of bottles of car cleaning supplies every day. Just a few. That's awesome. I appreciate it. I'll put some links down below. I do appreciate your time. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Of course, check out the ATA 300. And if you're interested in visiting Jason, Kevin, and myself in Denver, June 18th, 19th, and 20th, I'll have more information hopefully by the time this comes out, either on the ATA, the ammotrainingacademy.com website, or you guys know you can just email Larry at ammonyc.com. But I will say it is first come, first serve, and it's a limited space, and we'll go over all the things that we're doing there. As always, guys, thanks for listening. Big thank you to Tom, and we'll see you next time.